This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. So, proceedings of monumental importance have kicked off for just the fourth time in American history. But wait. Is it a good show?
From a television perspective, Democrats have to come out strong in that first episode. No, if for the same reason that when we're watching something on Netflix or we're listening to a new podcast, we only choose to keep listening if we're interested in episode one.
On Fox News this week, Ken Starr, best known for heading an investigation into the Clinton administration, poo-pooed the impeachment proceedings.
There is no John Dean. This is what the president told me. This is what the president did. We're far removed from Nixon and Watergate at this stage.
Certainly, former White House counsel John Dean's famous 1973 Senate testimony about his firsthand knowledge of Nixon's cover-up was striking, succinct, and memorably metaphorical.
I began by telling the president that there was a cancer growing on the presidency, and if the cancer was not removed, the president himself would be killed by it.
And on Wednesday, Dean himself was on CNN with his own assessment of the proceedings.
What struck me today in listening to these two witnesses is they already have more than they had against Richard Nixon to impeach him.
John Dean, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So expand on what you said, that there's already more at this stage than there was against Nixon?
We're at a fairly advanced stage in this proceeding. We've been at it almost since the outset of the Trump presidency. If you go back to the Mueller investigation, where he stacked up 10 potential instances of obstruction of justice, that outdid Nixon, and that evidence is just sitting there on the shelf. That was one of the thoughts in my head. The other thought was that we know pretty much where these witnesses are going from the little bit that has leaked out from their executive session, and it's pretty compelling evidence. They're very strong witnesses.
But when you were listening to the two witnesses on Wednesday, was there a big moment that you felt was particularly revealing?
Ambassador Sondland's telephone call in a restaurant with a tailor aide that was heretofore unknown.
The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
I think the Republicans would call that triple hearsay.
Well, you know, that's another thing that I find fascinating. There are more cases throughout the country in federal courts where the federal rules of evidence apply that are determined based on hearsay because of all the exceptions to the hearsay rule.
There's a rule that says that hearsay is inadmissible, but there are so many exceptions to it.
You can drive a truck through them.
It still is a determining factor in many, many cases in federal court.
Absolutely, in countless cases. The Republicans don't seem to realize what they're talking about, which surprises me. There are a few lawyers there. It is really not a very good argument. The argument also is a little fallacious since the Republicans are the ones who don't want the primary sources to come up and testify.
That's true.
White House is withholding them, and they certainly aren't putting them on their witness list.
Like you were. You were a direct source.
I really didn't want to be a witness. And contrary to the Republicans saying that everything happened in transparent, open environment during Nixon, I actually testified before the House in executive session, as did all the other witnesses against Nixon. Yes, his lawyer was there. In fact, his lawyer is one of the reasons that his case caved when the so-called smoking gun tape was released as a result of the Supreme Court saying that the president had to turn over all of his tapes to the grand jury. His counsel, James St. Clair, realized that the president had lied to him, and he had lied to the president. So he went to the president and said, "Mr. President, you've made me a liar. You've made me obstruct justice. It's my ethical obligation to go to the House Judiciary Committee and tell them I misled them."
Do you think that today's Supreme Court would have made that decision to release the tapes?
The only person I've ever heard claim that U.S. versus Nixon was not properly decided is Justice Kavanaugh on this bizarre radical conservative theory of the unitary executive who has all power. And this is what we're seeing some of play out right now, where they're claiming witnesses don't even have to show up in court or at hearings because these superpowers of our unitary executive. Well, the founders wrote those provisions in Article 2, and these conservative scholars seem to forget we were breaking from a monarchy when we wrote that Constitution, and they want to bring the monarchy back because they see the future not being very good for conservatives.
You know, we had Tim Naftali on the show a few weeks ago. He's a historian, former director of the Richard Nixon Presidential Library and Museum. He noted one big difference between 1973 and today.
Nixon was capable of shame, and he also had a sense of presidential norms. He covertly did these abuse of power, but wanted to maintain the appearance of cooperation, while in fact he was engaged in very heavy stonewalling. President Trump doesn't seem to care and doesn't think that his supporters care.
If you compare the situation where Nixon was forced to reveal and turn over his tapes, knowing that was the end of his presidency, the same parallel situation today, I don't think that Donald Trump would do as Nixon did and turn over the tapes. He'd say, "Listen, I've got the army. You send your marshal down here and I'll shoot him." And one of the reasons is that Donald Trump appears to have no shame. Nixon could be embarrassed. I've never seen Donald Trump embarrassed.
The New York Times TV critic James Poniewozik wrote this week that the media coverage of Watergate, quote, gave us much of today's concussive ballistic jargon of scandal. There were bombshells. There were smoking guns. Ever since, we've measured controversies as if on a decibel meter, judging them by their fireworks and explosive drama. But actually, he says, for a modern-day viewer, the 1973 Senate hearings looked rather quiet.
The documents that you've just given me are Xerox copies of a log, which I maintain myself.
Quote, there were no yammering newsroom panels, no countdown clocks, no hashtags. There's just testimony in a hushed hearing room and two soft-spoken anchors at humdrum desks trying to figure out what the president knew, when he knew it, and whether democracy still worked.
You know, one of the things I never understood after my testimony was people coming up to me and saying they enjoyed my show. I thought, what in the world are you talking about? It is not high theater. It is not high drama. But those who are comparing it to past proceedings forget, while 80 million people may have watched my testimony, it wasn't high drama.
It was a very general job type interview. Mitchell realized that Liddy was not familiar with the election laws and asked if I would assist him in any way I could in getting himself familiar with those laws. I agreed.
We were talking about shame. One element of this scandal and all the others that we've had in the Trump presidency is that the Trump camp acts as though if you do something in public, it isn't a crime. And sometimes the media act that way too. Just last month, even as the Ukraine whistleblower news was coming out, the president publicly said this.
China should start an investigation into the Bidens, because what happened in China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine.
What do you make of that? Does that strike you as a new, effective kind of defense?
Apparently, he picked this up from Roy Cohn. Just do it openly, do it blatantly, and people will just think you're a tough guy and not a criminal. So, you know, maybe that's his thought. I never found Roy Cohn to be much of a role model.
But maybe he's right.
It does actually take some elements essential to criminal charges away. Conspiracies rely on secrecy. That's the interesting part about Ukraine. He really did do this in secrecy. Until the whistleblower brought it to light, he wasn't calling on Ukraine to investigate the Bidens on the South Lawn. That happened after he got caught.
Senator Howard Baker had a succinct and still famous question in the Watergate hearings.
What did the president know, and when did he know it?
Howard Baker was using that to pin me down on exactly what the president knew and when he knew it, thinking, I'll get Dean to perjure himself.
Why was he trying to set you up?
Oh, you know, everybody thinks Howard Baker was Mr. I'm in the middle and I want to see justice done. There are two Howard Bakers. There was a Howard Baker in the closed sessions where he voted to do everything he could to help Nixon, and he had a back channel to the White House. And then the public Howard Baker, who always came out and said, ah, we reached unanimous agreement. And it was just all a fraud. If the only person who really knew this and could record it for history was Sam Dash, the chief counsel. He just found Baker to be a remarkable hypocrite.
If this goes to the court, it'll be John Roberts who presides.
I think John Roberts would bring a lot of presence. He may not want to. The next ranking member is Clarence Thomas. That opens itself up for a circus in my mind. And so I certainly hope Roberts does it. When Rehnquist, who did the Clinton impeachment, later reported on it, he said he never played more solitaire than he did during that time. And he made very few rulings.
So do you think that the American public needs to watch these hearings or not?
You know, first of all, a lot of people have day jobs, so they're not tailored at this point for most people. It'll be streamed, it'll be on YouTube, it'll be somewhere, and I think people should watch that to put a face on these issues and who these people are and how their demeanor is and let them judge for themselves. Democracy is tough because people want to be entertained today. Many people find Trump an entertaining showman as president, and they don't realize what the show is. They don't know where the story's going, and they feed off the scandal to scandal to scandal that doesn't seem to bother him at all, but it's certainly taking its toll on our system. I'm not sure we can take four more years of this and still have any kind of viable federal government.
John Dean, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
John Dean served as White House counsel for Richard Nixon from July 1970 to April 73.
Coming up, the bleating of bilious billionaires.
This is On the Media.